to say this. While we become outraged with all the violence in Chicago, we've got to connect the dots. It is no coincidence that homicides are up and shootings are up. This weekend, 2 killed, 45 shot this weekend. And all this is going on while the governor has cut all summer employment jobs, and while the governor has ended all anti-violence jobs in this state. It's no coincidence when you're on the street and you're abandoned by the government why violence is up in this city and why violence is up in this state. The governor is a co-conspirator of what's going on right now in the streets of Chicago. We got to make him understand that Illinois is not another business investment of his. Illinois is a state where there's people whose lives are at risk. Don't treat this like some business investment, Bruce. Treat this like there's people who elected you. This is our money. This is tax money. We have a say so in what happens with this.
How dare this man close the doors on our children? What's the difference in what he's doing now than Bull Connor did back in the day? We're not going to take it, ladies and gentlemen. The governor wants to balance the budget off of poor people, off of handicapped people, off of the mentally ill. Ladies and gentlemen, he wants to balance the budget off our baby. But guess what? Have you ever heard him talking about telling his corporate people to take a pay cut?
No!
Have you ever heard him talk about reducing some of those corporate loopholes?
No!
Have you ever heard him talking about, okay, we have been in the crisis here in Illinois. It's not the Republicans' fault. It's not the Democrats' fault. It's really the economy. And everybody has not been paying their fair share. There's some boys on the sales street that make billions of billions of dollars. And I'm like the governor, quite frankly. I don't want to raise taxes, but I want everybody to pay their fair share. And they are making some transactions that they're not paying taxes on. So the only thing I'm saying to the governor, make sure that everybody's in, including my baby, and nobody's left out, including your friends. So with that being said, Mr. Governor, let us go back to Springfield. You want a budget? Let's talk about a budget. Let us gather the money from the guys on LaSalle Street and let's have a financial transaction tax. And then when we get finished doing that, Mr. Governor, let's develop our own bank like North Dakota. And if that's not enough, Mr. Governor, let's get rid of the insurance industry and have a single payer health care so everybody can truly be in and nobody be left out.
Don't mess with my children. You know something? We don't have to put up with a bully. A bully cannot win when people stand together. A bully cannot win when you're standing with your brothers and your sisters. A bully can't win when you build coalitions in the neighborhood. A bully only wins when you let them. Right now we have a coalition of individuals because we understand what Governor Rauner does not understand, and that is everything is connected. We are connected to one another. Child care is connected to a good education. Education is connected to health care, because you're not going to learn if you're sick. You're not going to learn if you're hungry. That's connected to a good job. That's connected to this state. This is not about one person who doesn't want to turn us around. He wants to turn us backwards. We are not going backwards. This is not we're going to be standing up here in the street, dancing, working for free. This is our state. This is not Ronnerville. This is not Trump City. No, this is the city and the state of the people of Illinois that deserve the best that it has to offer. We are not going to be held hostage. We're not going to be held against our will. Our children are not going to be the cannon fodder to fight your fight. This is something that needs to be addressed. We want the governor as your voice and as your ears down in Springfield. We want the governor to come to the table not talking about things that doesn't need. We don't need to be talking about remapping.
Right.
A budget has nothing to do with remapping.
Right.
It doesn't have to be a term limit. It's called come out and vote.
Get
the vote. That we need to be talking about, how do we fund those essential things that make us competitive, not only in the United States, but in the global economy. This is not about being a vulture capitalist. Who do you know, where do you know that a CEO tears down his own business just so he can make more money? Vulture capitalists. That's what they do. This is not a vulture capitalist situation. This is a budget about people, the budget about numbers, or that in his mind, a budget about numbers. There's a face on every dollar that's in the budget. And we want those dollars spent on the things that we need to be the citizens that we can be. And that is making sure that we have not only daycare, but many of you also know we need people working night care. Because this is a 24-hour city, it's a 24-hour fight, and we're going to stay in it for 24 hours as long as it takes. So let's stay together, let's stay connected, and we beat the bully.
All right, welcome back to the show. Welcome back to George Wilder Jr. Show. I think we've got some of the volume pretty straight after that break, but like I said, I started the show, I was talking about Bruce Rauner, and I was apologizing to everybody out there who was expecting a guest to be on my show, Tony Fisher. He just decided to email me and tell me that he is going to reschedule. We will talk about that a lot later, but right now we're talking about Bruce Rauner, My Way or the Highway. He gave a speech today, and it was just awful. It was awful. He was bullying, threatening people, pointing, blaming, and the blame is nowhere, is on no one but Bruce Rauner. Let me say this again. Governor Bruce Rauner, it is my way or the highway. This is the way this guy talked. Why does he waste his time giving these talks or speeches to say exactly nothing? How can he talk about a budget, folks, for next year when there's not even a budget for 2015? This guy is evil, mean, ridiculous. Illinois, you get what you get this for not voting. This is what you get for not voting. You get this guy, and he's a mess. He basically bought the election, bought and paid for it, buying up politicians like Ken Duncan, buying him up. You know, I mean, this is what you get when you don't vote. People, you have to get excited. You have to get motivated. You have to get out there and want to change the direction of this country. It has to be done. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. My guest for today has rescheduled. That is no problem. Things happen. So now it's me and you. 347-857-1762 is the number in case you want to call in. If you don't want to call in, sit back, relax. The show is always great whether you're calling in or not. But anyway, I'm going to do a little bit on elder abuse in America. We're gonna get back to Bruce Rauner and the politics of Illinois because, hey, people, we are going into the eighth month without a budget. And you tell yourself, what is Bruce Rauner talking about? Why is he wasting his time running up to a microphone and giving these speeches or talks and saying exactly nothing? People don't want to hear that. People want to hear that schools are going to be funded. Their programs are going to be funded. Social services are going to be funded. They don't want to get up there and hear you talking about nothing is going to get done unless I get what I want. And I mean it. I'm not backing down. That's all he says. That he's not backing down from what he wants. Bruce Rauner has never ran for public office in his life. Everything he does with his checkbook, money. That's why he does what he's done. And also, as I've just got through mentioning, the guy is, what else can you expect, folks, from a Republican? I think the volume is too loud. Let me see if I can adjust it a little bit. Okay, we'll keep it there. All right, that little ding there. All right. All right, you're listening to George Wilder Jr. If you want, you can always follow me. I hope that you can follow me on Facebook. I'm always on Facebook, Black Talk Radio, LinkedIn. I don't know. I used to think that LinkedIn and Facebook were similar, but they're not. It's a different class of people that you can differentiate from LinkedIn. There's a different class of people, but it's best to be, if you're going to be on a social networking or you're going to do social media, so I mean, I would probably think that it's Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn are probably three of the best. Maybe you know one that you think is the best and you disagreeing with me. That's okay. That's fine. But from my view, from my opinion, my standpoint is Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. You know, and those are the ones that I'm a part of, and you can always find me there. You know, always find me there. With the input, leave me your what you think of the show, what you think of what my writings, which is, you know, some of the things I want to talk about my writing. Some of the things about what I write, other people have told me that they usually don't read that kind of writing stuff that I publish. And my thing is, wow, I don't read a lot of things that you may write. I'm not erotica or romance kind of a reader. I don't do that. And a lot of romance readers are not action readers. I like to write action. I like to put gut and meat into what I write. And a lot of women, men, you know, they're not used to reading that kind of thing. They're used to reading soft porn or erotica or trashy romance novels or some romance novels that may not be trashy, but they're not used to reading the things that some of us write, like action or memoirs or anything of that sort, which is okay. Which is okay because I'm not used to reading a lot of the stuff that they're reading. So that's okay. But I just wanted to point that out. And I've got a lot of stuff written. I'm basically a fiction writer. I have a lot of stuff up there that's fiction. I have a few things up there that's nonfiction. It's all good. I even try to make the fiction that I write, I try to add a lot of realism to those kinds of stories. I am a storyteller. I am a total storyteller. I am a writer. I've been told that I'm a great writer, a wonderful writer. But, you know, we'll just have to see. So if you want to check out some of the stuff that I produce, write, edit, and you want to check some of that, go to Amazon.com. I'm going to be going to Smashwords and try to get a lot of that stuff on Amazon and other outlets so people can read it and buy it and give reviews, whether good or bad, to whatever they think that they might want to do. You know, but reading is reading. I love reading. I wish my son was in the same thinking mode that I am in about reading, you know, because reading is fun. I love to read. I always say, even I ask Oscars authors on this show, that in order to be a good writer, you have to read. In order to be a good writer, a quality writer, you have to read, and you have to read quality material. I believe if you're reading quality material, you'll be able to write quality material. You know, things, and I believe that. I believe those kinds of things because I'm a writer. So what I want you to do is, if you're listening to the show, and I know you are, go to Facebook, put in George Wilder Jr., and a lot of things will come down, and just pick your choice. I know I had a guest on the show the other night. His name was Doug Sandler, and he was just awesome. He was just phenomenal. He was just awesome, and he was just phenomenal. And I would like to have him back on the show. He provided so much insight into these things. And the last I checked, his book was doing pretty good. Even if it's doing better than one of the ones that I'm writing, it's doing pretty good. But let me say this. Once you are a writer and a publisher, you are, as Doug said on the show, you are competing with, he said thousands, I'm going to say millions of other writers. You are competing with them, and you're selling your book. There are so many books on the internet, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other book-selling outlets that are totally free. A lot of these free books are just as good as the ones a lot of authors are charging $10 for. I mean, as a writer, you have to fight for every cent, every 99 cent that you're charging for that book. Because for every 99 cent you're charging for that book, somebody somewhere is giving a book away for free. And like I've discussed with Doug, people love things that are free. Some people just troll the internet and Facebook and social networking sites to see what they can download for free, what they can get for free, even though some may be able to afford to pay for a downloaded Kindle book. So it's a strange world. But, you know, us writers, we love to write. We love to write. And sometimes, most of the times, our writing will not generate much in sales or reviews, but we still do it. We still do it in hopes that one day Hollywood is going to call. George, we want your book. Here's the money. Throw us the book. We're going to throw you the book. You throw us the book, and we're going to throw you the money. Someone said that once. I think it was Ernie Hemingway. He said one of his books he just threw over the fence, and the Hollywood producers threw money back over the fence at him. And I've always been skeptical about letting Hollywood have one of my books because I know how they are so adamant at changing the characters, changing the settings, changing the story, rewriting everything. And, even though I've had people say, George, take the money. You know, that's good and all, but when you sell somebody your story, you sell the rights to your story, your book or your short story or your essay or whatever, you sell the rights, you want people to be true to what you've written. But once you sell the rights, they can do anything they want to do. They don't even have to give you credit for it. And sometimes if they're going to change but a lot of times they will give you credit for it. But a lot of times a lot of authors have had their stories turned into movies, and they were so shameful that they didn't want their name to be a part of it. So you have to be careful when Hollywood comes knocking. You know, the money is great, but you want them to treat your story the way you've written it. But a lot of times it ain't going to happen that way. So what you do is you just take the money, shut up, and let them do what they want to do with your story as long as they give you credit for something, maybe credit for writing it. All right, you're listening to the George Waters Jr. Show talking about his books, your books. All righty, we're going to have a clip on elder abuse because I'm doing a story on that, and it's fun. I'm always fun. It's always fun writing. If writing wasn't fun, I wouldn't do it. You know, I would not do it. All right, you're listening to the George Waters Jr. Show. I will be right back with that clip. Stay with me. So, all right. Drum roll. Here we go, folks. Thank you for being with me.
Major funding for NPT Reports Domestic Violence is provided by Waller, supporting the legal needs of Nashville's business community for more than 100 years. Time and again, our clients come for the lawyer, but stay for the firm. The First Tennessee Foundation, dedicated to strengthening the vital signs of our healthy communities. The Women's Fund of the Community Foundation of Middle Tennessee, dedicated to transforming the lives of women and girls and improving the well-being of our entire community.
All right, this just came in. Ted Cruz is leading Donald Trump nationally by 28% to Donald Trump's 26%, and I believe Rubio follows behind Trump. Now, this is news. Ted Cruz leading Donald Trump. This is news. This is scary news because I think Ted Cruz is a lot dangerous to America than Donald Trump is. I truly think that. Matter of fact, I kind of know that, and a lot of us know that. But Trump, it's only 20%. He's only 2 points ahead of Donald Trump. Okay? It's not like a landslide or anything. Trump could, you know, pass him up in a heartbeat. And this is just one poll. So who knows what the other polls are saying. However, but this is, you know, it's been reported on the national news. So it's real, I'm thinking. Because you can never really believe everything you hear, you read, no matter where it's coming from. You have to do your research on it. And that's something that's coming out nationally, that Cruz is ahead of Donald Trump. That's got to be – some people got to be aching in their pants for this. Oh, yeah, and they're talking also about making Obama's birthday a holiday, a state holiday. I don't think he, you know, I have my reservations on it, but I can't stop people from wanting to do something like that. Making Obama's birthday a state holiday. That means only in Illinois would have option of closing schools, businesses, to close or to stay open, you know. But that's awesome, I think. Awesome. Do I think he deserves it? Do I think he should have it? The jury is still out for me. The jury is still out for me. But, yeah, they're thinking about making his birthday a state holiday, an Illinois holiday. I'm pretty sure the Republicans are going to be crying their ass off, especially in Illinois. Wow. Lutheran, one of these, this is Bruce Rauner. Lutheran Social Services laid off 700 employees. These people work for the homeless. They cared for the elder. They meals. They gave out free meals, food, counseling, and to the homeless. And now, because of Bruce Rauner and his no budgets, 700 people have been laid off. And he's still blaming other people. He's acting as if it's not his fault. But I can tell you this. If Bruce Rauner would have never been elected governor of the state of Illinois, we would not be in this mess. It would not be happening like this. And all he does is give budget addresses with no budget. The man is not doing his job. He's not doing his job that he's getting paid for. He's taking money from public programs and giving it to private programs. It's Robin Hood in reverse. Take from the poor and give to the rich. And then blaming poor. Isn't that what Republicans do? Step on your neck and then blame you for it. Isn't that what Republicans do? But I'm glad to see people getting up out of the house, getting out of their beds, putting down the guns, and going downtown and protesting Bruce Rauner in droves. I mean, we had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people down at the Illinois Capitol today protesting this guy while he was giving a nothing talk or a nothing speech. People were down there protesting him. They weren't protesting Michael Madigan. They weren't protesting John Cullerton. They were down there protesting Bruce Rauner. Or you could say they were down there protesting the state of Illinois, which is Bruce Rauner. Yeah, Michael Madigan is not. He can take some blame. They can all take some blame. But the brunt of the blame goes to Bruce Rauner of Illinois because he's a jackass governor. What can I say? Just like if something goes wrong with the country, a lot of people are going to blame Obama. Something goes wrong, it's not right with Illinois, Bruce Rauner gets the blame. You cannot blame other people for you yourself not doing your job. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for being here. Thank you for let me see if I can't try to replay that clip for you. It's about elder abuse, and like I said before, I'm doing a book on elder abuse. I don't have a guest today. The person canceled, so we just have to work through it, just you and me, 347-857-1762. You're listening to the, let's see if we can find it. All righty, we are listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio.
The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Major funding for NPT Reports Domestic Violence is provided by Waller, supporting the legal needs of Nashville's business community for more than 100 years. Time and again, our clients come for the lawyer, but stay for the firm. The First Tennessee Foundation, dedicated to strengthening the vital signs of our healthy communities. The Women's Fund of the Community Foundation of Middle Tennessee, dedicated to transforming the lives of women and girls and improving the well-being of our entire community.
So this is right. It's been
and
canceled.
Members of NPT, Thank you.
And I keep telling you, the reason why it's canceled is because Bruce Brown.
This program contains real and dramatized violent content, which may be too intense for some viewers. Parental and viewer discretion is advised.
Because that you see working in those after school programs, they got to be what? Paid. Not paid, they can't do it. Not going
what
to
we hear all the time is you swept me off my feet. Paid.
This is all over the state. It's not just you.
Usually they are the most charming man you've ever wanted to meet.
This is why you don't have any gym programs like volleyball.
They reel you in. I never knew anybody like him. My mother loved him. My father loved him. One of the things we talk about is push for quick involvement.
Meet
these guys, keep you off your feet, and 2 months later you're married. We have this excessive charm, and then we have the beginnings. And it's insidious. It starts slowly. I love you so much that I want to be with you every second. Yeah, I want to go to the grocery store with you. I don't want to be away from you. I love you. You're beautiful. Don't go to work. I'll make enough money to stay home. It sounds like what we love. We want to be loved that way. And then it turns into, why are you at the grocery store within 20 minutes? You're not going to the grocery store.
So I'm like, I said before, if you got a problem with something,
in the beginning, he made me feel beautiful.
I was so glad to see people,
young,
thousands of people down there
love,
protesting him. And
cherished. That was something that I hadn't really felt very much in my life.
It seemed like he was always there when I needed someone. Always put a smile on my face when I didn't have one. When I was going through
I gotta tell you
a real rough time, he was there for me to lean on.
Was that in the
car?
When
I met my husband, he was so charming. He was warm. He was very gentle. And he just catered to everything I wanted. He was romantic.
You go like this.
I fell for that.
If your heart feels wrong, because it's wrong. Whenever you vibrate, you are soft. Soft, real soft, and then you think. But it's hard.
We're familiar with the headlines.
That means
violent crimes happening
wrong.
In our community, stabbing, shooting. However, more
by
than half of the violent crimes occurring in Tennessee are not happening between strangers. Rather, the threat, the injuries, and homicides are being committed by the person who says, I love you. Domestic violence is not arguments that escalate out of control. It's one partner in an intimate relationship asserting control over the other. It's about power and control. Here in Tennessee, the numbers and severity are far greater than the national average. Our state ranks third in the nation for the rate at which women are killed by men and has ranked in the top five for several years. This is a public safety crisis, according to Governor Haslam, because there is no typical victim of domestic violence. Statistics tell us we all could be vulnerable.
Abusive relationships start out like all relationships. If you were going to go out with someone for the first time and they reached over and they hit you in the face, you probably wouldn't want to go out with that person again. Sometimes it's almost too good at the beginning of an abusive relationship. The person may be buying their partner flowers or calling them a lot, texting them a lot, checking in on them, and it feels really good.
No, because it's been over.
Domestic violence is an escalating pattern of abuse in which one partner establishes control through force, intimidation, or the threat of violence. This relationship has predictable phases, as shown in the cycle of violence. There's a period of tension building, followed by an acute explosion, and then the apologetic honeymoon.
In an abusive relationship, the next part of the cycle after the honeymoon is what we call tension building. And that's where the partner may start to just let you know that they're in the control of the situation.
No, I said I'll take care of it, so I'll take care of it, all right?
they might start telling you what to wear or where you could go, who you can see.
You understand me?
They might limit the victim's control over their lives in subtle ways that the victim might not recognize right at first. And then what happens is we come to what's called the explosion or the outburst. And at that point, there may be hitting, there may be yelling, there may be screaming.
I'm really sorry.
You're really sorry. You know what's really sorry? You're really sorry.
Who's always sorry? You're the one who's always sorry, aren't you?
If I were the victim, I might say to my partner, you know, nobody's ever done that to me before. If you do that to me again, I'm going to leave you. And then what happens is my partner says to me, oh, I'm so sorry, baby. I loved you so much. I promise I won't do it again. I won't let it happen again. Please just give me another chance. And here we are back at the honeymoon. And we may stay in that part of the cycle for a while. It could be a few minutes. It could be a few months. It could be even longer than that. Basically, the abuser is going to keep the victim in the honeymoon part of the cycle again as long as they need to keep them in the relationship.
Valerie Nguyen has worked in the field of domestic violence for 17 years. She is the founder and chief executive officer of Mary Parish Center in Nashville. In its first 9 years, the center provided a myriad of life-saving non-residential services to more than 6,000 victims of domestic and sexual violence. In 2009, the center significantly shifted its focus to become the largest single-site therapeutic transitional housing program in Tennessee. Women and their children are provided cost-free housing for up to 2 years.
The average victim takes seven times before she leaves for good. She leaves, she goes back, she leaves, she goes back. And in the years I've done this work, I'm often asked, why? Because we love them. Because they're charming. Because they made us feel beautiful and wonderful like no one we've ever known. And because after they hurt us, they are the most contrite. And they sob and they beg, and we're the mother of their children, and we want a family, and so we go back. They'll have what we call the honeymoon phase, where everything's lovely. Then the violence starts again, and almost always it's worse than it was when she left the first time. The whole thing's escalated, and now he's going to punish you for the fact that you left.
There are occasions where our victims of domestic violence tell us that their batterer has actually taken them to the hospital for them to receive treatment, waited with them while they were taken care of, and brought them back home.
You want this chicken?
And then
you want
the honeymoon chicken? Starts all over again.
Later, still going out.
I heard a client say once that her batterer bought her a car, and things went well for a while in the relationship after that, but she was abused again at a later time.
There was a lot of personality change for me because I tried to change the way I was because I thought I was the cause of the abuse. So if I changed the way I was, maybe he wouldn't hit me. Maybe he wouldn't scream at me or call me these ugly names that he used to call me or do the things that he used to do. And I changed a lot. I used to be a bubbly, outgoing person, and I became very depressed and sour and serious, and I lost me.
Isolation is one of the big deals. So I'm going to isolate you. But pretty much you have to think, if I wanted to have complete control over you, what kind of things would I have to do? Well, first of all, I'm going to take away your car. You're not going to have friends or family around you, because I want all of your attention. You most likely are not allowed to have a job. If you do have a job, it's monitored when you leave, when you come home. All the money's given there because financial control. If I'm going to control you, I don't want you to have money. I don't want you to have gas in your car.
When I do look back, I find that there were indicators. I am very passive, and with him, as soon as I married him, his whole disposition changed with me. Immediately I became owned, and he said so right there as soon as the I do's were done. He said, now you're my wife, now you need to act like my wife.
But as time went on, just little bits of comments, small areas of isolation, then complete isolation.
I think one thing we see a lot is in cell phone usage. Someone pulling the phone away and checking that phone and just kind of scrolling through and asking, who is this call from? Who is this? That's not acceptable. We have a right to our cell phones and our cell phone usage and not expect we're going to be interrogated. It's very critical to have friendships outside of the realm of that intimate partner relationship. If that person is constantly demanding all of your time and not wanting you to go out and have friends or, moreover, even have relationships with your family, then that is another example of an unhealthy boundary, and we certainly have to have those relationships. It's important for life.
We used to give out little cards to women and say the characteristics of the abuser. But before I gave out the card, I'd say, let me tell you about Joe. And I'd start telling her, you're with a garden variety abuser. And that's a very important thing to say to a domestic violence victim, because it takes the burden off her. It lets her know it wasn't you. He would have done this with anybody. You just happened to be at the right place at the wrong time. And we oftentimes see, and this is fascinating, a woman will call a woman and say, you're going out with Joe. He used to be married to me. Get away from him. He's going to hurt you. Happens all the time. And he does hurt them, which is why I end up meeting him. So we have this repetitive behavior with both the victim and the abuser.
The National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey finds 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men will experience severe physical violence by an intimate partner at some point in their lifetimes.
When we work with a victim of domestic violence and she begins to explain to us the dynamics and the roles that exist in their home and in their relationship, it becomes very clear that there is very rigid thinking and very unrealistic expectations and stereotypes that exist in the mind of a batter. It's very black and white. A batter often believes that that victim is there to serve them and to supply all the emotional needs and all the happiness that he feels like he deserves, or in some cases she feels that she deserves. And it's really hard to meet that match.
A lot of times people will ask you, what did you do wrong when it comes to the behavior of your husband? And it's so easy for people to say you deserved it or you made him act like that. No. If I have to say this about myself, I was an honest wife. I loved my husband. I loved my children. I cared for everything about where we were and who we were as a family. His behavior was given to me slowly. I realized that he had issues from his past that he had not dealt with. And so I'm thinking, okay, I'll just love you out of this, you know, because I care for you just that much. And it wasn't enough. The love wasn't enough.
I couldn't understand how somebody could say that they love you and turn around and hit you. So I always felt like that it must have been something that I was doing to provoke this anger in him. His phrase with me always was, you have the most beautiful face I've ever seen. I could look at you forever. And he turned around at one point and punched me in the face and broke my nose.
My first marriage didn't work out, and, you know, so, you know, it must be me, you know. That's what I thought. It had to be me. Couldn't be both of them. It had to be me. It's not just about being hit. It's the words. It's the mean words. I'm going to degrade you until I think you are low enough. It's the money. Here, take this $20 and make it last all week. It's the children. You better not leave these children here with me. It's your sexual relationship. Forced sex. Maybe no sex.
communication with the outside world. My husband broke my phone. He ran over it. He threw it in the ditch. So when I had to call my mom or my sister, I had to beg him for his phone, and he would stand right there listening to me talk. And of course, conversations are short, not long and laughy like they used to be, but short and quick and off. Because his thing was, nobody needs to know what's going on in my house.
He started getting verbal, call a bitch, and then it just, you know, accelerate up and up and up from that, if you can only imagine, you know, being called something worse than that. You know, down, that degrades you. When I started the abuse, I started feeling bad about myself. It was basically just go to work, come home. He had a problem because I made more money than he did. So I used to hear that a lot in the verbal abuse. Got so physical one time to the last time that, you know, I got kicked so much in my abdomen and thrown down the stairs that I started having very bad vaginal bleeding. And I'm still dealing with that today.
You can be controlled by the clothes that you are made to wear. You can be controlled with foods that you are allowed or not allowed to eat. You can be controlled by not being able to use your own vehicle or not having access to money in the family. There are so many ways that a person can be controlled that does not include physical violence.
My husband was a burner. He would burn things. And so, of course, we would leave the house and come back and things would be broken. Things would be burned. Cut, you know, and I'm questioning him, why would you do this? Why would you destroy our things? Oh, I didn't do that. And he would have no remorse.
Generally, it starts with name calling, and then it's pushing. Sometimes it's I'll throw an object, but not at you, but close to you. The messages imply it could have been you. We then move in oftentimes to animal abuse. A lot of that. Talk to any police officer who's worked a lot of domestic calls. They will tell you. You never go into a home where there's been a lot of domestic violence, where there's an old dog. You know why you never see old dogs? They don't live to be old dogs. I had a woman I worked with who had birds, and he killed every one of her birds in front of her. He never hit her. He didn't have to. He killed her birds and said to her each time, "This could be you."
The harsh reality is a home with domestic violence is a threat to all those living there. 30-60% of perpetrators of intimate partner violence also abuse children in the household. 88% of pets living in homes with domestic abuse are either injured or killed.
On one of those days when my husband just didn't have it on right, he came home and he was upset about nothing, what I would call nothing. But because he was a drug user, he came home with a lot of paranoid mentality. And so he would come in and accuse, "Who's here? Where have you been?" You know, things like that. And so one day I just felt like I had enough of that. And I told the kids, "Put your shoes on. We're going to go over to my sister's. We're going to let you cool off." And so while they are going down the hall to get their shoes, he grabs me by the neck. He does this. And all I can think about while I'm in this position is, this is going to be my last breath. I'm going to die. My children are going to come back down this hall and see me dead. And so I said, I need to try to muster up a sound. So I scream for my son. They come back down the hall. They're screaming, "Let my mama go. Let my mama go. I'm so tired of this." They had heard it. They had seen it. They felt all of this tension that was in the house. So he lets me go, and he runs outside and he slashes my tires. And I tell the kids, "Get in the car. We're leaving on rims." And we're screaming. I'm calling 911. He's trying to get in the car. It's this big old crazy scene of we're trying to get away from someone who's trying to hurt us. It was terrible. I hated that moment.
I had told him in the beginning it would probably be quick, and it was. And he was, we broke up over the phone. It wasn't even a breakup, you know, because it wasn't really a relationship. It was a very brief affair, I guess. It was a quick dating relationship. And he was fine over the phone. I said, you know, I told you this might happen. And he said, that's okay. And, then he appeared at my apartment. He said, I'd left a few things in your apartment. Do you mind if I get them? And I said, no. And he came up, and I was standing in the bathroom, and I was washing my face, and he was standing at the bathroom door, and he said something, and I, again, I was half asleep and watering my face, and he said, this isn't what you want to do, and then I, the next thing I knew, I was flying through the air. And I'm telling you, I don't care how strong you are, whether you're a male or a female, when someone hits you with the full force of their weight and you are unprepared for it, there's no coming back from that. There was not even a question that I could even defend myself, because he, you know, when years later, when I became an advocate, I had to learn how to safety plan with women. And one of the things we do is we not only safety plan after they leave, we safety plan when they're in the situation. So I've walked many women through where not to be assaulted. So when you say to a woman, if you know he's getting ready to assault you, you know, back out of the kitchen, don't go in the bathroom, back into the bedroom. And that seems really counterintuitive, but the thing about a bedroom is if I throw you across the room, there's a really good chance you're going to hit the biggest thing in the room, which is the bed. So you'll be soft and maybe relatively safe. One of the worst rooms you can get assaulted is the bathroom, because everything you hit is going to be hard, and that's exactly what happened to me. So I ended up in the bathtub, and I kept losing consciousness. And he meant to kill me. He was strangling me and was telling me, you're going to die. Like, it was clear. And I truly, honestly felt at that moment that I was going to die. I had no doubt in my mind. When I came to, he was straddling me, and I could tell by his face that he thought he killed me. And it kind of shocked him back into reality. So, long story short, I was very injured. I had several broken ribs. I had a broken nose. Blood was everywhere. You know, this is unpleasant, but it's part of the story. I had urinated during the assault, and that had mixed with blood, and I had no idea how injured I was, because it was hard to figure out. Anyway, finally I was able to escape from the apartment. And at the time, this was in the late 70s in Philadelphia, there was no domestic violence laws. So police officers, when they came, said, well, you were dating him, yes. You were having consensual relationships with him, yes. And the cop basically said, well, be careful who you go out with next time. And that was it. Which is, there's really no way to describe how the rage of injustice that occurs when something like that happens to you. Of course, it wasn't over. He stalked me for 2 years. And I don't know how to explain what it feels like to be stalked. I can tell you that, you know, I can use those words you hear all the time about living life on eggshells. I do not have the words to tell you. I can just, you never rest. That's it. Like them, you never rest. You never, because what he did it, and now I know that it's what they all do. They take breaks. So just when you feel like, oh, it's been a month, maybe he stopped, they appear. And that's what he did. And he was great at it. He was terrific at it. He would, you know, by the time the police came, he would always be gone. They could never find him. I didn't know where he lived. It was just this ongoing. I mean, for 2 years, I've never in 2 years walked anywhere without with someone else, someone with me. To work, back to the house, back to work. I didn't go out at night. You're a prisoner. He made me a prisoner. I have to tell you that was a long time ago. And even talking to you, even now, even after all my own therapy and all my years of working with others, it still causes a sensation in my stomach. You never forget it.
Growing up in a violent home is terrifying and traumatic. This is the reality for more than 3 million children in the United States.
It's always amazing to watch children. who've been around in a house with violence. They watch your hands. They study people. They're always aware of what's happening because they're used to things moving fast, literally. So they study. They read the room. It's frightening. It's frightening. It occupies a lot of their little brains when they could be doing other things. They're worried about where your hands are. And a couple really landmark studies. Here's what we know. When you have two children in a family, one is being physically abused, one is not. One is being sexually abused, one is not. The child who has witnessed the abuse, whether it be sexual or physical, will end up with more trauma than the child who's actually been abused. They will exhibit and have more long-term effects than the child who actually had the abuse. It seems so counterintuitive. How could that ever be true? Well, you add all of what the victim felt, and then you add the impotence that the child or the other person felt because they couldn't fix it. If you look at drug abuse, if you look at runaway, if you look at prostitution, if you look at suicide, you are going to see that those children come from families where there's violence. If you and I could go find 200 runaways right now in the streets of Nashville or anywhere, you will find that all of them fled violence. All of them.
Usually what we always do is we look to our parents to teach us not to hit. Well, if you're not learning that at home because hitting is normal at home or aggression is normal at home, then that is the culture of the family. This solves problems. This is the way that we interact. This is how you get what you want. And then you're doing it at lightning fast speed because of the behavior and the change of chemistry within your body. I'm one of the few counselors that are willing to work with children under the age of 5. But what we've been able to look at, the recidivism rate in domestic violence, is we're always trying to recreate a relationship. If mother cannot have a healthy relationship with her partner, she can still have other healthy relationships. One of the first ways is your relationship with your child. That's the first relationship that we have in life. So when we're looking at the parent-child relationship, a lot of times counseling can be a huge component in that. When I'm working with children, very young children, I might be helping that mom learn to reparent or try different parenting techniques. Meanwhile, while trying to support that child and also understanding his or her own personal experience in that domestic violence or aggressive or violent home life that he or she might have came from. Also, what I'm looking at is repairing their relationship. Can they learn to trust one another again when they came from a situation where there's no such thing as trust? Can they also, later on in life, as teenagers, have healthy relationships? That's probably the most imperative because they didn't learn what a healthy relationship looked like. They don't understand how to problem solve without either being a victim or being an aggressor. And so they're trying to figure out how do you have conflict resolution without violence.
Domestic violence hotline. When victims call the crisis line, you frequently hear a sense of desperation. They need help. They are looking for someone to turn to.
Now, have you ever tried leaving before, ma'am, or even communicated to them that you were thinking about leaving?
The crisis counselors never give them advice in regards to their situation. They basically offer them options and guide them as they are making decisions about their next step.
I'm so glad that you called. You should be very proud of yourself. I know it's just a phone call, but this is a tremendous step that shows incredible amount of strength on your end. You should be very proud of yourself for making these moves. And it certainly is a vast safety net and support networks that you can tap into, and we can help you with everything that you need.
There are several resources for victims in Nashville. The YWCA Weaver Domestic Violence Shelter is the largest in the state, providing a safe place to live for women and children. The YWCA also offers crisis counseling, children's services, support groups, and a 24-hour confidential crisis and information line. The Morning Star Sanctuary provides emergency shelter and transitional counseling for adults and children, assistance with orders of protection, court advocacy, and mentoring. Morning Star also offers HOPE, a comprehensive children's program.
You have to be really brave to make that phone call, to reach out, because you have to understand, in most victims, the batterers told her, if you ever try to call, I'll kill you. And they've shown you they will kill you or your children. Once the kids come into the picture, the whole thing changes. It's way more complicated because you now threaten the kids. Or you say things like, you'll never see them again. And we know, in fact, abusers, we see that, unfortunately. We see situations where the children, when you have those murder suicides where kids are also murdered.
All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook, follow me on LinkedIn, follow me on Twitter. I'm all over the place. We're still talking about Bruce Rauner and his turnaround agenda. I mean, they're talking about this all over the place. The guy is just awesome in a bad way, in a negative way. He's ruining the state. I mean, he wants what he wants, and you know, it's just not going to happen. The Democrats are not going to give in to him. They're not going to let him take away their values. And Bruce Rauner wants to bust unions. He claims he wants to do this. To my surprise, he's backing off some of the things in his turnaround agenda, but he's not being specific on that. What policy or issue in his turnaround agenda that he's willing to give up? There were no specifics on that. And there was no specifics on what he wanted to do. All we know is that there's no budget for 2016. There's no budget for 2015. And that he's talking about 2017. What is it? How can you? It's another nothingness budget. He's asking the legislature to give him power to turn around the state, to turn around the schools. They're not going to give him anything. He looks so, you know, like he's so, I'm going to do this. He's a Republican. He's not going to do anything. Give him the power? No way. Effing way. He can't get anything. The only thing he can get is a budget for this state. It's affecting everyone who lives in the state. It's affecting schools. It's affecting social programs. It's affecting agencies. People are being laid off. People are losing their jobs. Passing the budget is a basic function of government. If you know, if he's not passing a budget, if he doesn't have a budget, and he's begging to take charge, he's not doing his job. He's not doing his job. He's holding this entire state hostage, and the man is not doing his job. He should be impeached. He should be recalled. I think his budget talks, his budget speeches every other month or so, I think this is just smoke and mirrors to say, I'm trying to do my job, but they won't let me. Nobody has to let you or give you approval to pass a budget, which is the basic function of a governor. Pass a budget. We are 8 months behind. Illinois is 8 months behind in passing a budget with no effort in sight going beyond. It just doesn't seem like it's going to happen. As I've said before, with Rauner, it's always my way or the highway. Do it my way. He's threatening. He's saying, I want this. if you can't give me this, then I want this. And the Democrats are saying, no way, we don't trust you. He hasn't got a budget yet. And he barely said anything about the budget, the past budget. And he's talking about next year's budget. How can you do that? How can you talk about a budget that you don't even have? And he's not even sure if he wants to have a 2017 budget for the state of Illinois. I just don't get it with this governor. Now, I'm just hearing that he wants to give up on some of his turnaround. Is he giving in? Is he caving in? Is the pressure getting to him? It should be, because everybody, the people of Illinois is in his ass about trying to take away what they have worked so hard to have. Trying to take away so much they've sacrificed for. But he's a Republican governor. And like I've said in a thousand other shows here, that we've got so many Republicans around the country, it's pathetic. We got 31 governors in 31 states in America wreaking havoc on its people, on their people. And the reason why we've got so many governors in so many of these state houses, especially in the South, is because people did not vote. They refused to vote, and we've got 31 awful governors, Republican governors, in these state houses around the country. It's awful. And a lot of people, but I have a feeling, I really have a feeling this coming election, 2016 election, November, people are going to be motivated, they're going to be excited, they're going to be thrilled to get to the polls to throw these jackasses out. Said so many times, if Bernie Sanders is the president of the United States, or if Hillary Clinton is the president of the United States, we have to give them some people they can work with, they can deal with. We have to not only vote for a Democratic president, but vote for a Democratic senator, vote for a Democratic House of Representatives, and for Congress. Because if you do not, if we have a Democratic president and we have a Republican Congress, it's going to be the same thing. Nothing is going to get done. They're going to be blaming each other for whatever happens, turmoil that there might occur, just like they're doing in Illinois, blaming each other. But we know who is to blame. Everybody can take some blame. But like I've just got through saying, Bruce Rauner takes the brunt of that blame because he is the governor. And he's acting like he doesn't have any power to do anything. Give me a break. All of those executive orders that he has implemented, give me a break, okay? As if he has no power to do anything in Illinois. The other day, I mean, his last speech, I mean, this guy was fuming at the mouth at wanting to bust unions to get rid of collective bargaining. You get rid of collective bargaining, you get rid of unions, the employer can treat you any kind of way in the workplace. They can lay you off at will. They don't have to pay you. You're going to get treated badly. Of course, you're going to get, you know, they can lower your pay. They can fire you at will. You come in one morning and you look at your supervisor the wrong way, you're out the door. But this is what he wants. In Bruce Rauner's mind, he's trying to save you money. Save the union dues from coming out of your check every week or every 2 weeks. But he doesn't know people want to pay those dues because they want the union to protect them and to be behind them in case the employer tries something that would cost them their jobs. Bruce Rauner, you can't take away something from people when they want it. But the Supreme Court is taking this on. But I'm pretty sure the Supreme Court is going to be on the back burner for now since Anton Scalia's death from the Supreme Court. And President Obama, to my liking, says he's going to appoint someone to the Supreme Court. Great. Show the Republicans in Congress that you're not going to back down, that they're not going to bluff you, they're not going to bully you. You're going to do your job because it's constitutional. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. And I want to say this one more time that my guest, Anthony Fisher, decided that he wanted to reschedule for some reason or other, you know, and he's not, as you know, probably know, he's not on the show, but maybe next time. All right, and you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you for all your feedback. Thank you for everything. 347-857-1762. We're going to take a break right here. I will be right back. Stay with me. Thank you. You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Okay, we're back, folks. We're just about off the air, and I want to say to my listeners out there and all of my followers, thank you so much, thank you so much. And we will be back tomorrow. It's been fun. It's been great fun. It's always fun on this show. Okay, someone just told me 90 seconds on the show. It's always fun. So I want to say take care. I hope to see you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody. Take care. All right, I'm gone.